Thank you. Actually, I'm going to report here on some joint work with Tian Quang Din, and the work could be summarized as follows: how to deal with some convergence problems, involving analytic sets of arbitrary codimension. So, I'm just going to take a sample of questions, tell what is the problem, and then try to tell you how it works when the codimension is one, and try to sketch what is the method, how to deal with it in arbitrary codimension. So the first example I chose is just take F, a polynomial automorphism of CK, not affine, and then it extends as a birational map of PK, and let me call I plus the indeterminacy of F, and I minus the indeterminacy of the inverse. For example, if you consider Henon type maps like Z square plus AW comma Z, then in this example I plus would be just 0, 1, 0, and I minus would be 1, 0, 0. So when I plus does not intersect I minus, we will call this polynomial reg automorphism. It's called regular. It is then a very easy exercise to prove that there is a P such that dimension of I plus is K minus P minus 1, and dimension of I minus is P minus 1. You can introduce K plus, the set of Z, so that F and Z bounded, and similarly for K minus with respect to F minus 1. And it's very easy also to prove that the closure of K plus in PK is just K plus union I plus. So the picture should be something like this. Here, this is for K plus, and this is for K minus. K plus is this. Okay, it is also easy to compute that if omega is the Keller form, standard Keller form on PK, then Fn omega is cohomologous to Dn omega, where D is the degree, and also you have that Fn omega P, P is this number here, is cohomologous to Dnp omega P. And it's again quite easy to show, let me call this D plus here, and this is D plus. D plus is the degree, algebraic degree of F, and D minus is the algebraic degree of F minus 1. And it's easy to show also that D plus P is D minus to the power K minus P. So here is the first theorem, which involves some convergence problem. Let F, a regular polynomial automorphism in CK with the notations as above, there is a unique positive closed current of mass 1 supported on K plus. And similarly for K minus, but I'm not going to write it. The corollary for this is an equidistribution result for hypersurface, or not for hypersurface, precisely for analytic sets of arbitrary codimension. Let S belong to CP. This is PP closed currents of mass 1. Assume for simplicity that support of S does not intersect E minus. Then Fn star S divided by D and P converge to Tp. Did I give it a name? Tp. So for example, if S is analytic set of the right codimension and you consider the current of integration on this analytic set, you divide by the volume, and then you apply this result, you know that all of them are going to converge to the same guy. I should say that this type of problem was considered first in for Hennel map, and that this result, the corollary for Hennel map, is due to Bedford Smiley. Okay. Since I'm not sure people are too familiar with this, I'm going to prove the trivial case. I mean the case where P is 1. Okay? And even for simplicity, you can imagine I'm just in C2. But it doesn't matter here. So, T... Sorry? No. This theorem is precisely that. There is no word in the agent. Okay? And you are going to see I'm giving a complete proof for the theorem for P equal 1, and thank you for the question because you have stressed what was the main point of the theorem. Okay, so T plus is limit of Fn star omega divided by Dn. And then I pick a current supported on K plus. Then I can always write, since there is only one cohomology class here, and I suppose it's of mass 1. S minus C is going to be ddc vs, and I can normalize vs, then it's unique, by asking that vs is on I minus 1, this is why I'm in C2, but it's not, doesn't matter too much, is 0. This is unique. this is the potential, so I'm using a potential theoretic method. And in this case, actually, it was done by Furness and me in 93. So, yeah, the limit exists and it's easy to show. I cannot give all the details here. So let me define Sn as Dn Fn star below S. This is supported still on K plus. And it's easy to show, to see that Ss is Fn star divided by Dn Sn. That's a triviality in C2. And since currents have no mass on points, it turns out that this is true also in PK, and it follows that the mass of Sn is 1. So I use the potential theoretic method, Sn minus T is ddc vsn with the Sam normalization. And by the way, it turns out that f of I minus is I minus. It's a super attracting point. Then now I get S minus T plus is Fn star Sn divided by Dn. And let me tell you that S star T is dt plus. Minus F star N of this T plus is just T plus. So it is just DDC VSN composed with FN divided by DN. Here is again the picture. This is K plus. I minus is somewhere here and it's attracting. And this is a compact family of plurisubharmonic functions. And then any limit, since it's bounded above, this is a compact family, any limit is going to be negative. And the only thing I have to prove is that any limit is zero. So assume there is any limit is negative, so assume with obvious notation that there is a subsequence converging to some limit which is negative somewhere, then by Hartox is going to be minus delta after a while on some ball. This is V and this implies that V and I compose with FNI is less than minus delta DNI. So the functions VNI, FNI are going to be very small somewhere. On B, precisely. Then the proof is finished. There is a powerful compacity result which says that if you have a quasi-plurisubharmonic function on the projective space, there is a constant alpha positive so that this phi, ddc phi, larger than minus omega c, and compact family. Then this has to be less than a fixed constant, independently of phi, and alpha is positive, this is the point. So now E to the alpha delta DNI, this is going to be less than this family of, less than a constant somehow, and the integral is on FND. And this is larger than E alpha DNI, the volume of FNB. And the volume of FNB can just shrink as a constant a to the power 2n. Alpha dni here. And that's impossible. Because alpha is positive and you have this. So the point was we could use a very strong compacity estimate for pluri subharmonic function, which is classical and reduces actually to one variable problem. This has some surprising consequences actually if they were mentioned the Alford's technique to construct currents out of a C. This tells you in particular that if you have any image of C, and there are plenty of them in K+, if you apply this Alford's technique, you always converge to the same current, which is that one, and which is pretty fat. Okay, so now I'm turning to my main question. How to deal with this convergence problem, for example, for regular polynomial automorphisms? If you look at this proof, one of the first crucial points was here that I could find a VS which was defined basically uniquely and which is a function with, and the family of this function have a strong compacity estimate. Well, if S is a PP current of mass 1, then you can I stick first into the projective K space because it's simpler. You can certainly solve this equation with a U, a P minus one current, and I can always normalize it so that I have this. The problem is that U is far from being unique because I can add a dV plus d bar V. It's not going to change U at all. And also, the other problem is that I have, it's defined only almost everywhere. It's not defined everywhere. So I have no way to take U wedge the current of integration on some analytic set. It's not defined at all. And there is no way to give a meaning to that. So the way we solve this type of problem is using superpotentials, and in some sense, a superpotential is not going to be a function defined on projective space or on the compact manifold, but it's going to be defined on currents of by degree k minus p plus 1, k minus p plus 1, positive of mass 1. So this is a huge compact space, and US is going to be defined with value in minus infinity plus infinity. So now I have to define it, and let me call that US. And for simplicity, assume first that R is here and smooth. Then I define US at R as this potential, ordinary quasi-potential US, applied to R. If R is smooth, this is meaningful. And maybe I have to show you that because not to cheat too much. This is indeed independent of my choice of US. Otherwise, the definition would be meaningless. And the reason is just I can write this R minus omega k k minus p plus 1 because of my normalization, and this is u s d dc vr. I can choose vr smooth, then I can integrate by part, and this is d dc u s vr, and this is again s minus omega p vr, and they can have normalized this. This is s vr. There is no us here. Therefore, this is well defined independently of my choice of us. The point is, this computation and this formula makes sense only when R is smooth or when N is smooth, when S is smooth. So my problem is, I want really to build a potential theory on this compact space here, a very big compact space, and I want these functions us, this superpotential, to have exactly the same properties as plurisubharmonic functions do. So I need to put some structure here, but let me maybe just tell you what would be the result, though it's not a good definition. I'm going to define USR for arbitrary R in CK minus P plus 1 as lim sup of USR prime, R prime smooth converging to R. Except you cannot work much with this definition. Here I have used, I'm in the projective space, is because I can choose this quasi-potential bounded above. So this is the final result is going to be this, except this definition is bad. I have lost all the nice properties, etc. So I need to put a geometry on this space of currents, and somehow I need to travel from one current to another. And the right way to travel with it is through structural disks. I have a current R, which can be very nasty, and it is of a certain dimension whatever. And then I'm going to construct a current R like that, such that with one more dimension, it's going to be sitting on delta cross pk. Delta is just the unit disk. And then I'm going to have the slices. Slices are going to be r theta. Theta belongs to the unit disk. R0 is going to be my current, R. The slice above the origin is going to be R. And the other R theta are going to be smooth. And this structural disk is going to be nice by meaning it has going, it's going to have a good curvature, pi delta star r wedge pi star omega p is alpha a smooth form. This is possible and quite easy to do in the in a compact homogeneous manifold because you have automorphisms to move things and regularize. Then it turns out that the function theta goes to us, our theta is well defined out of the origin because r theta is smooth, but it's quasi-Floris subharmonic, meaning ddc us r theta is going to be larger than a smooth form. And then you are able to take limit. The reasonable way to define usr is just limit as theta goes to zero of usr theta. Yeah, I think it's the same alpha. It's the same alpha. So now we need the analog of this result, which of this compacity estimate, which was crucial in our proof. And the analog is going to be the following estimate, that USR is less than C1 plus log plus the uniform norm of R infinity, and C is independent of R. This estimate, actually, you prove basically you reducing it to the Floris subharmonic case in one dimension. Then, now the machine can work somehow, and you define, as I did before, Vs is going to be Us minus Utp minus a normalizing constant to make Vs on I minus to be zero. This is Vs against this current to be zero, and that's possible if S is supported on K plus. Otherwise we would have problems, and the closure of K plus is disjoint from I minus. Then we can, as before, define Sn is dnp Sn star S, and compute that Sn is of norm 1, and basically what we introduce L as S star divided by dp, and lambda is the adjoint S star divided by dp minus 1. And then you can write Vs is V ln Sn, and what you want to prove is that Vs is zero. If we prove Vs is zero, it will mean that the potential of S, the superpotential of S, is the same as the superpotential of Tp, and it will mean that S is equal to Tp because the theory is reasonable when the superpotential coincide up to constants, the currents are the same. And then, actually, the proof is then very, the basic ideas are just similar. I take R, a smooth current with some support condition. I'm not going to be, and a compute VSR, and this is VLN SR. And it turns out that this is VS lambda and R because the formalism is very good and you can take a joint. And the point is basically to build a calculus, a coherent calculus, so that the basic operation makes sense and you have that. This is not S, this is SN, LN SN here. This is correct. And if this is less than minus delta, then as before, we are going to take that VSN, lambda NR is less than minus, sorry, I forgot, may, here I have 1 over dn. This is correct. It's difficult to remember the. So we will have that VSN delta dn. And how do we get the contradiction? The contradiction is going to appear because for the same reason as before, except we are on an infinite dimensional space, etc., but the reason is just these superpotentials are like Clori subharmonic functions. They are not, they cannot be too small meaning too close to minus infinity, on two big sets. This is the contradiction. And so the basic point is here that if you push forward the current R, you are going to enter into this region for dynamical reasons, and the uniform norm of lambda infinity R is going to be less than this. And hence, you cannot have this of the order of magnitude dn and this of the order of magnitude log plus mn. This is the contradiction. Hence, all the limits are zero, and the convergence, you have the rigidity theorem telling you that this set has just a unique current of such by degree, and you get easily the equidistribution results out of that. Okay, so now let me turn to compact Keller manifolds. I should say actually that one of the outgrowths of this theory is that you have a reasonable theory of intersection of currents, positive closed, of arbitrary by degree. Just like basically in B degree 1-1, what you need is just an integrability condition of the potential. But I'm not going to deal with that now. So now I have X omega, a compact Keller manifold of dimension k, and I assume I have an automorphism of x. Then one defines the dynamical degree of f as limit when n goes to infinity fn star omega q wedge omega k minus q to the power 1 over n. And it's an important result to Chovansky, Tessier, and Gromov that this function, this sequence is log concave. This means if it has the following, it is of the following picture. Okay. And actually, in this lecture, let me assume that there is a DP which is strictly larger than the others. It's not necessary for all the results, but for simplicity, let's just do it. Okay, I have to be systematic. What is this theorem? At least one of the results is this. F automorphism of X DS are the dynamical degrees. F star is acting, for example, on HQQXR. And suppose V is an invariant subspace under F star. Assume that DQ is strictly larger than dq minus 1, but well, I just repeat it here, and that all the GAN values of F star restricted to V are strictly larger than dq minus 1. The conclusion is each class in V contains at most one positive closed current. So I guess you get the similarity with the other results I mentioned. When I was in CK with polynomial automorphism, the rigidity of the set K plus was such that it imposes completely the current that it could be supported, though they are very, very wild current, very thick. Here, it is the cohomology which imposes, and basically an algebraic condition, this is an algebraic condition, imposes the uniqueness of the current. Let me give a corollary and an equidistribution result. Corollary, F, D, S as before, have a technical condition about the multiplicity of maximal value. I think I'm not going to write it. Basic M appears when you put F star in Jordan form. So the F star is not necessarily diagonalizable, then you have an M, and that's the point. But the spirit of the theorem is this. If you have a sequence Ni such that DQ minus ni, there is an m, I should have ni 1 minus m. Fni of si converge. What this is, I assume the convergence of some cohomology classes. So this is an algebra problem. Okay? The conclusion this implies si are positive closed current of by degree qq, then this implies that the corresponding current converge. Convergence of cohomology classes of a sequence appropriately normalized imply convergence of currents. Okay? This is exactly the equidistribution you might expect. If you don't have the cohomology classes converging, forget it. Okay, and maybe since we are in arithmetic workshop almost, I want to mention the following result, though it's a little, maybe not the right context, but F is, as above, assume DP is larger than max DJ for J less different from P. So there is a maximal thing. And the technical condition about no Jordan block in some appropriate space, but I don't think it will be easy to. It's not technical, just I don't have time to. It's in cohomology for the space with dominant eigenvalues. Then the periodic point saddle point are Zariski dense. That's the statement. This means that there are many of them, and they are Zariski dense. And the approach to this is to construct a green current of B degree PP, to construct another green current of B degree K minus P, and then this is a measure. It turns out that you have to make sense of this wedge product, and this is done using the superpotential. These currents don't come as wedge product of B degree 1-1 current, so you could use the standard theory. They don't come as product of 1-1 currents. So you need a way to give a meaning to this wedge product. Then this measure is going to be ergodic and maybe and even stronger properties. And it's going to be not supported on a Zariski set. And actually not on, sorry, it's not going to be supported on analytic set. Indeed, it's going to be very fat. There is an alpha positive so that this is finite for every quasi-plurie subharmonic function. Okay? And now comes some difficult dynamical work. In particular, you prove using the work of de Telin that mu is hyperbolic. This means that the Lyapunov exponents are all non-zero. I don't define the Lyapunov exponents, they are just expanding, measuring the expansion and contraction. And then there is a theorem due to Katok, and this measure is also of maximal entropy. And then there is a theorem due to Katok, which tells you that the support of mu is contained in the closure of the periodic saddle point. Well, I mentioned this just to tell you that there are many directions where you can use these superpotentials. So now let me turn to some ideas of proofs. Well, though I have already given some, but let me tell you something about the difficulties that occur in for arbitrary compact Keller manifolds. The theory in the projective space is reasonably satisfactory, and one cannot expect more because basically all the properties of plurisubharmonic functions are valid for these superpotentials. When you have an arbitrary compact Keller manifold, then things become a little more difficult, and one of the reasons is this. The diagonal doesn't have always a negative quasi-potential. There is a counterexample in a paper by both Gillet-Soulet, and then this means that when we try to solve this equation equal a current minus a smooth form alpha, so that it's possible to solve, indeed we cannot find always u bounded above. So we were obliged just to develop somehow the first steps of the theory, and let me introduce the space dp is s. It's the current, the real current that can be written as the difference of positive closed currents. This is a vector space, and they put a norm on it this writing is anyway not unique, but then you can put a norm, this type of norm, and in this case, the currents, the superpotentials, are going to act on currents R that you can that are DDC exact, and you can normalize the UR. And the main point is to develop enough plurisubharmonic function theory for that to have good compacity estimates. And it turns out that even they are weaker than in the projective space, what you have is some estimate of this type, USR, now is going to be less than C1 plus log plus, and here you have the C1 norm instead of uniform norm. But this is enough to work out things and to prove conversion theorem. And it's actually maybe that's the wrong blackboard. And technically speaking, you need to put a metric on these spaces, and the metric is something like this, is a Kantorovich type metric. S minus L is going to be the supremum of S phi, where phi L, the supremum is taken over the phi CL, of an enormous CL less than 1, and the distance between two currents is going to be S prime is S minus S prime. So this gives you a lot of Polish spaces, but actually I'm serious, it's important that there are Polish spaces, but what is technically important for the theory to work is also that you have a notion that these superpotentials are Hölder continuous, and to have Hölder continuity you need a metric, and actually the L is not too relevant because what it changes is just the exponent of Hölder continuity, and that's it. So with this in hand, basically you can prove that, to speak about the invariant space theorem, which is maybe unfortunately erased, that remember I had this invariant space V, then basically what you do, you show that each class C in this space is represented by a current TC in the right DQ, and that it satisfies F star TC is T of F star C. And that gives you green currents, and you can work about that, but the main point actually is not really the specific statement of the theorem, it's just somehow that there is a method to handle some convergence problem involving higher codimension. So I stop here.